That's the first portion of the Variations on the Duet by Menon, Welche Liebe fühlen, from the Magic Flute by Mozart. Well, the opera by Mozart, and the Variations by Beethoven, with Misha Majsky, the cellist, Marta Argerich, the pianist, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That music is among those pieces you can hear for cello and piano on a recital Saturday afternoon, tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock at First Presbyterian Church in Urbana. That'll be played by cellist Kawai Yu and the pianist Phoenix Park Kim. They are with us live this half hour for a preview of that program. And then coming up, also live in our studio, will be the American record producer, songwriter, guitarist, singer Michael Rowe, who is participating in the Audio Feed Music Festival, which opens today at the Champaign County Fairgrounds in Urbana and also runs tomorrow. We've been doing features on that new festival all week long, and Michael's appearance will wrap that up. He'll be live with us coming up very shortly. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. It's your connection to local performances, and very pleased to welcome Kawai and Phoenix to the program. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Phoenix is associate professor of piano at Indiana Wesleyan University. It's so easy around here to say Illinois Wesleyan, but Indiana Wesleyan University. And Kawai teaches there as well, and at Eastern Illinois University.
I knew you were
at Eastern. I didn't realize you were also over there, so you hop back and forth.
Yeah, it's a little bit.
Yeah, is it much of a drive?
Right.
It is much of a drive?
It's quite a drive, yeah. But it's exciting to teach and perform with wonderful colleagues.
Remind me, you got your degree at the University of Illinois or are still working on it?
I got my degree 2 years ago from University of Illinois.
So I should be calling you doctor as the same as Phoenix as well, I assume. How did you guys team up as a duo? And when?
I first met Phoenix when I, performed at Indiana Wesleyan University. At that time, I was still finishing my doctorate, but since last year, I became a faculty at Indiana Wesleyan University, and we have been playing since then.
I mean, you could easily, Phoenix in particular, have hooked up with any number of string players, wind, brass players. Why him?
Well, Kawai is a very sensitive cellist, and Indiana Wesleyan University has a very vibrant music program, but for string faculty, we have one cello faculty, and that's Kawai, and cello is one of my favorite instruments next to the piano, so I love collaborating with cellists, and Kawai is just a wonderful colleague to work with.
I don't know how things work at Indiana Wesleyan, but I know here at the University of Illinois, I don't know if it's still true now, but it has sometimes been true that certain people in an accompanying program can get around to specializing in working with, say, string players or trumpet players.
That's right.
And not necessarily even at this program, but, you know, someone goes out and becomes a collaborative pianist and often has that sort of specialization.
Right.
Are you teaching solo piano as well as, is there an accompanying program?
Yes, we realize more and more when students finish their training at school, when they go out, they do a lot of collaboration with other musicians. So accompanying, collaborative piano, whatever you call it, is a very important skill. And long time ago, we didn't get emphasis on that. But these days we realize that's an important part of the piano training. So I teach both solo studio piano, but also we have accompanying program that we require all the piano majors to do some collaboration with other students, either in vocal studio or instrumental.
And you and I have both used both terms.
I know.
Accompanying collaborative piano, because
right.
I learned some time ago from a fellow named Rohan De Silva that you can get in trouble with one or the other of those terms depending upon what pianist you're talking to.
Well, some people think that, you know, the term accompanist is not as... It doesn't have enough respect. I don't know.
Respect for the pianist.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, that's how some people feel. But, I mean, collaborative piano really puts emphasis on the fact that it's a partnership. It's not just pianists following the soloist, but it's a balanced partnership.
It's basically chamber music.
Right.
And a lot of pieces, particularly like sonata. And today we're playing like the Dixta Lieber. Like the piano part is as important as the vocal part,
or even more.
Actually, more.
Well, I think it's universally true that the pianist always plays more notes.
That's absolutely
true.
Right.
No matter who the person is that they're collaborating with, I always thought it was really rather odd that, you know, somebody like say Joshua Bell comes around and is performing with somebody who is probably equally prominent on the piano and. Bell is the one that gets all the applause. I thought it was really always kind of strange. But anyway, regardless of that, what I was sort of getting to is whether you, Phoenix, have done any sort of specialization in your collaborations.
Well, I can't really say that because I do equal amount of vocal collaboration and a lot of chamber music with other string players. When I went to school, my degree was just in piano performance, so it wasn't like an accompanying degree. So, but I enjoy doing a lot of chamber music and playing for singers.
So you are a generalist in that sense.
Yes.
Well, this recital that you all are playing tomorrow afternoon in Urbana has some music that was originally for voice and piano.
Mm-hmm.
Transcribed for cello and piano, and it's also got music that was originally for solo piano, but songs without words, right? That have been transcribed here
for cello and piano. Mm-hmm.
And that one there is the one that sounds kind of curious, seems kind of curious, because it's already a song without words, therefore without singer, but here you're sort of introducing a vocal part, as it were, and giving it to the cellist. How has that worked, and who made these arrangements for you? I'm talking about music by Mendelssohn.
I think we have two sets of the song with the words. The Opus 62 is original for piano and then arranged by cellist in the 19th century, Georg Gotemann. But this one, actually, Opus 109, I think actually was originally written for cello and piano.
Was it?
Yes.
I wasn't aware of it.
It was published like after Mendelssohn's death, like, a little bit later than his other eight volumes of piano song without words, solo pieces.
Which are pieces I just love, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So both of the ones you're doing on the program are going to be played cello piano. The one
yes.
we're going to hear right now was originally written that way.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay, well, I've learned something on this program today. It's pianist Phoenix Park Kim and cellist Kawai Yu. Live on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. A Song Without Words, Opus 109 by Felix Mendelssohn, played live in our studio by cellist Kawai Yu and pianist Phoenix Park Kim here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. They're giving a recital tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock at First Presbyterian Church in Urbana, which is located on Green Street between Lincoln and Race Streets. We have support for our program today from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium in Urbana. The Corkscrew's Bouvons Wine Bar features live music. This Friday night from 6 to 8, it's Big Blue Stem, and from 9 to 11, the Clark Gibson Quartet. This Saturday evening at 6 p.m., it's Prism, and at 9, Katie Flynn. Details are on the Corkscrew's Facebook page. Kawai, I noticed from your biography that in addition to quote-unquote, the modern cello, you also play Baroque cello and viola da gamba in at least a couple of different groups.
That's right.
What for you is, well, first of all, what when you say Baroque cello versus the modern cello, what's the difference?
Well, there are a lot of differences. First of all, the instrument, fingerboard is shorter. It's actually,
shorter on the older one?
Yeah, on the older one.
Baroque.
And of course, there are a lot of variations of how a Baroque cello will look like. That's, just as if there are so many different pianos, different harpsichords. The use of strings is different. Like, we'll be using gas strings rather than metal or steel strings that we will use now. The bridge is also a little different. Particularly right now in modern, so-called modern cello, it's more angle-wise, particularly, and then the size also varied at that time, we know that, like, for example, for playing in orchestras, some cellos are much larger, and some cellos are smaller, and for solo, and particularly to match with the cello, the bow also is different. Right now the modern bow that I have, it's the weight from the frog and the tip is about the same. We try to be as sustained as possible, but it's a little different in terms of the shape of the bow, and the use of the wood is also different.
And for those who don't know the term frog in relation to string playing, it has nothing to do with the amphibian, but everything to do with the part of the bow that is more or less where you hold it. And of course, the tip is the tip, as it would be in other contexts. And then viola da gamba is another instrument, although related altogether, and we won't go go down that road. I know you're playing some music, each of you playing some music solo on the recital, including Baroque music for solo cello, the most famous pieces for solo cello by Bach. Will you be using the cello you have here, or will you be using a Baroque cello at the recital?
This time I will use the same cello, just to, you know, so that I don't have to change so much between pieces. And it's also a different feeling if I use gut strings, and it may, you know, I have to tune more, you know, if I use two instruments. So
it makes it a little easier for you to just stick with one on one program.
Yes.
You want to give us a sample, perhaps, of the Bach?
Oh, sure. Yeah. This is the minuet from First Cello Suite.
From the Cello Suite No. 1 in G Major by Johann Sebastian Bach, played here live by Kawayu on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And he's going to be playing in a recital tomorrow afternoon with the pianist Phoenix Park Kim. And speaking of instruments, of course, cellists and just about every other instrumental, well, every other instrumentalist, carries their instrument with them but can leave it anywhere they want. A singer, of course, carries their instrument with them all the time and can't leave it anywhere, although it can, they can turn it on or off. Pianist almost never carries her instrument with
her. That's right.
unless you are a really famous pianist and have the means and the inclination to do that, like Horvitz used to do, for example. Mm-hmm. And of course, here on this show, you don't even get to play a piano. You know, it's a Yamaha Clavinova that works well for many types of things. And I'm just have always been curious how pianists manage to adapt, given that you basically have to play what you're handed or what's sitting in the place where you're playing.
It is definitely a challenge, but you always want to make sure you get there plenty of time ahead so that you can get familiar with the instrument. You try out the action, you try out the pedal, you adjust your touch, you adjust your pedaling. So it is a challenge, but on the other side, if things don't go well, you can always blame the piano. I'm just kidding, but yeah.
Well, but actually, you know, to some extent, I'm sure you could, because different pianos, whether they're real or electronic, have different types of action, meaning the key
Definitely.
Bounces back at you in a different way,
yeah.
or is harder or easier to press,
mm-hmm.
and can really affect. I mean, if you most people practice on one piano.
Right.
Most of the time. And you get used to that touch.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I would think that even sometimes having a bunch of time with whatever piano you're going to play on might sometimes still make it almost impossible to play certain passages depending on their difficulty and how similar the piano you're using for performance may be to what you practiced on.
Yeah, that's very, very true. And, you know, when you're a student, you go to practice room and you get to play on different pianos, and you actually, it's beneficial for you to do that. Sometimes some schools advertise like it's all Steinway schools, so they all have Steinways, but I don't know if necessarily that's a good thing practically, you know, because in the real world, you're not always gonna get the Steinway at the concert. And, you know, from different makes, the heaviness and the thickness, how it feels on your fingers is very, very different. But it's part of your training. You have to get used to adapting your touches and your pedaling. And for me, the most difficult thing is the weight of the keys. You know, the lighter it is, it's easier to play. But when it's heavier and sluggish, you really have a lot of, you know, adjustment that you have to do.
It's actually extra work.
It is.
Physically extra work.
It is, yeah. Sometimes when you want to produce really subtle, soft sound and you have to go deeper, you sometimes miss making the sound.
I would imagine so.
And I'll bet. Disappointing.
And I'll bet, too, if you're used to playing on a piano with relatively easy action,
right,
and you get one that has relatively hard action, after you finish a recital, you could have a sore hand. If your muscles aren't used to that. Does that ever happen?
Not necessarily sore hand, but sometimes you get like a little more tense as you play. Mm. So it gives fatigue in my case, like around shoulder, neck,
shoulders.
You know. It's not necessarily fingers that you play with. It's actually entire arm, and fingers are just the end of your tool. So it's not necessarily a hand that get tired, but entire shoulder to neck and your torso that gets tighter as you, you know, have to adjust and constantly having to think about pressing harder, you know?
So I imagine as part of one's training, one learns how to use the body differently depending upon the different action of a piano.
Yeah, you can say that.
Okay, thank you. I did. I'm glad that was okay. Well, let's hear some music of Schumann.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, these are pieces originally for voice and piano.
Right.
The rather famous Dichterliebe, poet's song.
Poet's love.
Poet's love. And are these, and these are your own transcriptions.
That's right.
Come on. Did you take them literally? Did you shorten them? Did you just do the songs exactly as they were and give the voice part to the cello or?
In this particular arrangement for cello and piano, I didn't change the piano part. But for the cello part, I basically take the voice part. But I change, like, sometimes I have to move an octave up or an octave down and change a little bit. You know, I add the bowings and thinking about it, you know, articulations in order to see if, you know, how I can get that kind of singing voice from the cello that matches the original version of it.
Do you, in preparing the pieces for yourself, pay any attention to what the words originally were?
Absolutely.
Do you?
Yeah, absolutely. And for example, you know, we have timing, like, you know, how to take time. There are places we have to think about, like, you know, punctuations and the vocal part and, you know, We in one of the pieces that we may be playing, number four, there's particularly one part that, you know, the poet just say a word and then stop, and, you know, and then we you know, kind of continues. We have to follow it.
So you have that in mind as you play.
We have that in mind, yes.
And when you did the arrangement. Which ones are we going to hear?
We're going to play the first two songs, just to give you an introduction. The first song is called In the Wondrous Beautiful Month of May. Basically, this song cycle is a narrative about a young man who falls in love but then gets heartbroken. Very sad cycle, but the first song talks about how he falls in love in the wondrous, beautiful month of May.
So this is how it all begins so wonderfully before it goes downhill.
Right. The second song immediately changes, yeah. And it talks about how his tears go forth and his sighs and the love is not all that just joyful.
Okay. Music by Robert Schumann from his Dichte Liebe, as arranged by Kawai Yu, who is the cellist in this performance with Phoenix Park Kim on Live and Local. Music by Robert Schumann, two of his Dichter Liebe on Live and Local. Kawai Yu, cellist, Phoenix Park Kim, the pianist. They're going to be playing a recital together tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock at First Presbyterian Church in Urbana on Green Street. It includes those pieces and also the Mendelssohn song we heard earlier, as well as another one, all of the first cello suite by Johann Sebastian Bach, all of the variations with which we opened by Beethoven, and of course many more of the Schumann songs, and two pieces for solo piano by George Gershwin. Which are they both indeed solo, or are they?
They're both solo.
No cello in either of those. Right. Embraceable You and Love Walked In, wonderful arrangements of both of those. Well, I appreciate your taking the time to come in and perform for us here, and best of luck with tomorrow's recital.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Stay tuned next for a live performance by singer, songwriter, record producer, and guitarist Michael Rowe, who is going to be playing at the Audio Feed Music Festival in Urbana this weekend. And here is a bit of him from one of his more recent albums.
I see 4 and 20 elders on their knees. I see 4 and 20 elders on their knees.
Oh Lord,
oh Lord, have mercy if you
Two cuts from the 2012 release, We All Gonna Face the Rising Sun, by Michael Rowe, who will be among the many performers at this weekend's Audio Feed Music Festival happening at the Champaign County Fairgrounds in Urbana. In fact, it's happening right now. It started noon or maybe even a little before and will continue till something like 1 o'clock tomorrow morning and then pick up again on Saturday, similar hours, a little before noon, and then running into the wee hours. And lots of other performers, including the other folks we've had on this show as the week has gone by. It's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's musical heritage at the University of Illinois. Now featuring the new exhibit, the James Bond theme, Music to Live, Die, and Love Another Day. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. Michael Rowe is a member of at least a couple of bands and involved in a lot of different collaborations, including the two performers we heard just there, bassist Mark Harmon and percussionist Brian Myers, member of and lead singer for a group called the 77s, also founding member of a group called the Lost Dogs, which pulls together musicians, as I understand it, from various other primarily Christian alternative rock bands. Is that a fair description, something like that?
Yeah, it's probably a nice word for what we all are.
What would be not so nice a word?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I've been called everything, as long as they call me to supper.
Fair enough. Michael Rowe, as you can hear, is with us live on this portion of Live and Local, and I really appreciate your coming in. I wanted to give to play the sample of that record just because it was kind of fun to sample myself. A lot of different sounds, a lot of different types of songs, and you were just telling me as we were listening to them that it was kind of a project for you to have found some of these songs. Where did they come from, and what made you decide to do this particular record?
Well, I needed to get a record out really quick for a tour, and I didn't have any new songs written. And my group, the 77s that you mentioned, had previously recorded an album full of these archival gospel, blues, and bluegrass tunes. And I thought, well, why not just try doing an acoustic presentation of some of that stuff? Because when I had to research for that album, I was given hundreds and hundreds of these Library of Congress type recordings that go all the way back 100 years or more. And it was such an education, and I'd kept all my notes about songs that I might want to record someday or go back and revisit. So I got a chance to do that for this record, and then the deeper I got into it, you know, it was supposed to be quick and easy. And I found that trying to interpret these songs authentically took a lot more work and time than I'd thought. And some of the tunes, I actually tried to get the original sound, you know, by degrading the quality of it.
The first one we heard,
yeah,
was there.
And it ended up coming off kind of like a Oh Brother, Where Art Thou sort of record, which wasn't my intent. What I really wanted to do was expose some of these recordings that people hadn't heard by names that they may have heard, but not so much the recordings, because the quality has so degraded over the years that a lot of people don't have the patience to sit and listen to that stuff, you know. So I thought, well, if I can bring some of those into the light, they may appreciate the songs because they're great tunes that just got lost over time.
So the two we heard, would we know who recorded those previously?
One of those is wrongly credited. Now it slips my mind who it's wrongly credited to, but gosh, you really caught me now because my mind is going to go completely blank trying to name the artist. I should know all this stuff. It's just my head isn't in it.
Well, people can find it out, particularly if they want to get the record.
Oh yeah.
Well, it was fun, as I said, it was fun to listen to, and I also wanted to play it in the case of the second song anyway, an example of at least some of your sound with other people. Mark Harmon, you've done a lot of recording with in different groups.
Right.
And I didn't bring in one of the records, I guess, is also pretty recent with a fellow named Derry Daugherty, you're calling yourselves, and the album Kerosene Halo, which has some interesting sounds on as well. And of course, the first song was all you singing, you know, with yourself in that in that old scratchy idiom, which was a lot of fun. What do you spend most of your time doing these days?
Touring.
Touring solo?
Yeah, solo and with other duos. You know, I have a broken down version of 77s that goes out as a duo.
Broken down meaning?
Meaning like not the whole
broken
electric band.
Off.
Just me and one other guitar player. Yeah. We present a kind of an unplugged version of it. And the reason for that is that the touring business, well, the whole music business has been in decline financially. So we're going back to a much more primitive, elemental way of presenting music to the public, at least at our level. You know, if you haven't had hit records and established yourself with a very large commercial fan base, then the only way you can really continue to make a living as a musician is to literally bring it to the streets. I mean, we're one step up from that. We play living rooms, church, social halls, bars, any place where our fans will have us. And the fans are the promoters. Almost all of the professional promoters that we've worked with in the past have gone by the wayside. So this sounds sort of like the way I heard music was presented, you know, in the old days where you had bards coming through the streets or parlor presentations where rich people would hire musicians to come and play in their home. These people that hire us are not rich, but they're willing to take some of their expendable income and give us a job and have their friends and family over, and it's not what I had envisioned for myself as a young man starting out in music, but it beats stealing hubcaps.
Depends the value of the hubcaps. Maybe.
I guess so. Yeah, people keep stealing mine, so maybe I should consider that.
What did you originally set out to do?
Well, I think any young man who grew up, particularly in the 1960s and 70s, maybe even 80s, 90s, and maybe even now, if they're buying the sort of elaborate lie that is sold to the public via shows like American Idol or X Factor. You have, you know, dreams of superstardom and taking over the world with your music and your persona, you know, and a lot of this is driven by hormones when you're younger and ego and wanting to be the fastest, the best, you know, the shining star. And attaining that kind of career and success is somewhat akin to winning the lottery. This is what I found out the further I stayed in music as a professional, that those kind of success stories are possible, but they're not usually probable. There's so many factors that go into that kind of success. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. It takes a tremendous team of people from management, agents, record companies, radio, all of that old school mechanism that has now given way to a new sort of paradigm with the internet and with the advent of Facebook and YouTube and so many new tools now that we have that any young musician can use. And I always joke about any monkey with a typewriter can have a music career, but it's true. If you have talent and you look good on your iMovie camera or your iPad, and you can present yourself online and get enough people interested, you can actually carve a career that Justin Bieber is a classic example, but there are many other examples. So,
what'd you say? It's a really different time to be making a career, and it's probably a whole lot easier for people to have to come out with CDs and less expensive. But I'm going to talk to you about that topic in a minute. Because you're involved in a particularly interesting way of raising money for a recording project, as I understand it, and I do want to ask you about that.
Yes, good old Kickstarter.
But let's hear some music from you first.
Oh, might as well.
Yeah, Michael Rowe's going to be playing a little later this evening, 7:45 on Sean Michel's Arkansas stage at the Champaign County Fairgrounds, part of the Audio Feed Music Festival. And we'll have him out of here in plenty of time for that. What do you want to do?
I'm going to do a song that both of my bands have recorded, and I've recorded solo. There's about 9 different recorded versions of this song because it's the one I'm most associated with. And all the versions are incorrect in some way. So maybe today, right here on NPR, I will get it right. It's called The Lust, The Flesh, The Eyes, and The Pride of Life.
Well, I feel like I have to feel something good all of the time. With most of life I cannot deal, but a good feeling I can feel, even though it may not be real. And if a person, place, or thing can deliver, I will quiver with delight. But will it last me for all my life, or just one more lonely night? The lust, the flesh, the eyes, the pride of life drains the life right out of me. Well, I see something and I want it, bam, and right now, no questions asked. Don't worry how much it cost me now or later. I want it, babe, I want it fast. I go to any length, sacrifice all that I already have and all that I might get, just to get something more that I don't need. And Lord, please don't ask me what for. The lust, the flesh, the eyes, the pride of life, it drains the life right out of me. I love it when folks look right at me and what I'm doing or have done, and lay it on about how groovy I am and that I'm looking grand. And every single word makes me think I'll live forever, never knowing that they probably won't remember what they said. Tomorrow, tomorrow I could be dead. The lust and the flesh and the eyes, the pride of life, it drains the life right out of.
Michael Rowe, live on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. So how did you do? You said that was a...
That was a good one.
That came out okay?
Yeah, it was good. It could have been worse.
Well, I suppose that's...
It always can be worse.
What you said it hasn't... It was not quite right on every other recording. Somebody get the words wrong or the chords wrong or didn't have the right feel or what happened?
I'm being somewhat... I guess because of the kind of song it is, it's sort of a you know, when I wrote this, I was an angry young man. I was really upset one day, and I got out a tablet and just wrote all that stuff on the tablet. And I was going to arrange it into proper rhyming verses with a nice sort of lilting rhythm. And when I got to the studio, I was running down the idea to the guys, and I said, look, I'm just going to sing these lyrics the way they are right here, and I'll get it better later. And I found that there was something about that conversational sort of thing that worked. So it's not the kind of thing that, you know, you may not want to formalize it. You may want to always have it sort of alive and living in its own place. And I think that's why, too, like I was saying earlier, having to do a lot of recording at home and in these sort of makeshift situations means that it's a lot like the old days where people would just come in, record, and get out. And they didn't have time to nitpick and make it perfect. And with our limited budgets and time constraints, a lot of times we have to get these good really fast. But sometimes that's great, and sometimes it leaves things undone or things that you wish you'd gotten better. So in the case of this song, I don't think we ever quite – I'd say there's ones I like better than others. But I'd rather have a song that's popular and that people like rather than one perfect recording, you know, that's everyone sort of memorizes and gets sick of. I've got a lot of recordings of this song, so it's cool.
And I imagine that's one that people will hear later this evening. Or
yeah,
maybe
we'll
not.
Do this song tonight at the audio feed, definitely. Yeah.
You with Steve Hindelong and Tim Chandler.
Yes, that's an amalgam that we've never done.
So that'll be exciting for you all around.
Yes, the festival wanted me to play electric and have a rock band. And, of course, I howled in protest, being a folk singer by trade now.
But you're going to do it anyway.
Now that I'm old and wretched, I like being a folk singer, you know. So they insisted, so I had to get these guys to play with me tonight. And they're back at the hotel, you know, sweating in their boots trying to learn all these songs.
Well, I realize as the time is gone that I won't really get to be able to ask you about what I was going to ask you about. People can read about it. And I was talking about how another modern way to make a recording, which is to raise money online for it through online service, for example, called Kickstarter. You have a new CD you're working on called Guadalupe. People can read about it on your website, what is your website?
There's several.
The main one I found on you, and I didn't write it down.
I would say that www.michaelroe.com, and
there
it's R-O-E.
R-O-E.com. And you can get the full scoop there and maybe make a contribution if you want to.
Yes. This is the last 24 hours.
So is it really?
The critical time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we just gave a tiny pitch in there.
It's very nice.
Probably not supposed to, but I did it anyway.
Oh, no, it's good.
Wanted to give you a chance to do another song before we go out.
Okay. This is called Smokescreen. I wrote this over 30 years ago, and it was haunting me. You know, it was one of those things where for 6 months I kept hearing this music, and I thought I was losing my mind, you know, and I was going to see a psychiatrist and all this. And a friend of mine said, wait a minute, you're a songwriter? You're haunted by music? Why don't you write the song?
Write it down,
and,
yeah.
And then it'll stop. So that's what I did, and it did. So it's Smokescreen.
Smolder like some cigarette. I smoked every pack of lies made yet. I never read that little warning that said I'd be an eternal soul with an eternal crave. Cashed every premium for this flip top grave. When I locked my heart, nothing but me. Mm-hmm.
Smokescreen, music by Michael Rowe, live and live and local. Appreciate you joining us today.
It's a great honor to be on NPR.
Yeah, we are an NPR affiliate. Speaking of, coming up in a couple of minutes, it's All Things Considered right at 5 o'clock. And I can hear, you know, just particularly the previous song, but the song we opened with, which had you singing, I think it sounded like at least four-part harmony, high, middle, and very low, and there's the low in your speaking voice right there, and then in the singing voice as well. You got a nice vocal range.
Well, thanks.
Certainly enjoy it. And he'll be playing tonight at 7:45 on Sean Michel's Arkansas stage at the inaugural Audio Feed Music Festival. It's happening at the Champaign County Fairgrounds. In fact, if you get over there right now, it's been going on since about 12. It'll do the same tomorrow, run till midnight or 1 or so. Four different stages plus one that you could perhaps get on yourself if you get over and sign up in time. Michael, thanks very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
A few other things you can go see and hear live in our listening area. The Kilbourne Alley Blues Band is at Allerton Park in Monticello this evening at 6 o'clock. The Big Creek Guitar Band are starting up at the Pink House in Ogden in about a minute, 5 o'clock. At the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, they're doing a Comedy of Errors, a preview tonight at 8 o'clock at Ewing Manor in Normal. It's the Cornstalkers Cajun Band at Alta Vineyards in Champaign tomorrow night at 7:30. A Dookie Trio play jazz at Sugar Creek Arts Festival in Normal tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. Chris Villillo is at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield tomorrow afternoon, also at 1 o'clock. It is Anything Goes, the musical at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, 8 o'clock tonight and tomorrow, and you can check their full schedule as well. I'll be back with another show on Monday. It's live and local here on FM 90.9. We are officially FM 90.9, WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293AF Danville. We're a listener-supported broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. It is 5 o'clock.